everyone's on the line, and welcome to Veganpalooza 2012. This is our final session of the conference. Thank you all for being here. I'm your co-host, Steve Prusak, and it's an honor to introduce our next guest. He's Dr. Will Tuttle, author, educator, pianist, and composer. He's lectured and performed widely throughout North America and Europe. He's the author of the acclaimed Amazon number one bestseller, The World Peace Diet, and recipient of the Peace Abbey's Courage of Conscience Award. He's the creator of several wellness training programs and holds a PhD from the University of California, Berkeley, with a focus on educating intuition and altruism in adults. He's taught college courses in creativity, humanities, mythology, religion, and philosophy. A former Zen monk as well as a 30-year vegan, let's welcome to Veganpalooza our friend and co-host, the extraordinary Dr. Will Tuttle.
Wow, thank you, Steve. I really want to thank everyone also for going through this adventure together, the Veganpalooza event. And as we've been realizing, as it's been going along, Steve and I have been realizing this, that this is actually the largest vegan internet event ever, and actually, I guess it's also the largest vegan education event in the history of the world, in the sense of actual gathering of people to learn about vegan living, to learn about compassion for animals and all the consequences of that, of health and sustainability. So you are all what helped make this happen, and we're really delighted that this has been able to be supported by so many of you. And we thought we would actually talk a little bit here in the beginning about the sessions that we've had. We've had basically 5 days. We had a wonderful preview with Dr. Neil Barnard, and then we had 5 days of information and inspiration. The first day was nutrition and wellness from a vegan perspective. The second day was social justice. The third day was thriving as vegans. The fourth day was living and sharing the vegan life. And then, of course, today, the fifth day, spirituality and health, again, from a vegan perspective. And we are planning on having a call later in the week, probably. We'll see. Steve will send out an email about it, where we'll do more of a recap of the ideas and the significance of the ideas that we heard. There's just such a mountain of information and understanding that has been laid before us here. We're going to have this event next week, and it's going to be an opportunity not only for Steve and I to talk about the ideas, but also for everyone who's listening to ask questions and to discuss some of these ideas too. So join us for that. We'll be hearing more about that later. But the main thing that I'd like to say about that right now is just simply to realize that there are so many dedicated people with such enormous passion, such enormous amount of caring, and working so hard in a variety of fields, from medicine and health to social justice programs and researching on animals and feeding people, feeding hungry people, working with people in education, in spirituality, in different ministries, and through creative endeavors, through restaurants, through cooking classes, and through blogs, and through bringing programs to hospitals and teaching people. It really goes on and on. And in a sense, we're just scratching the surface, because what's actually happening, I think, is so huge now. The vegan movement is really gathering momentum, and this is I think, an indication of that. So what I'd like to do, though, is to talk a little bit specifically here about the spiritual dimension of veganism, and to help us understand essentially that we are all embedded within larger systems. And I think spiritual teachings of the world emphasize this, that no person is an isolated object that was born and will die, just a thing in a meaningless universe, that we're actually embedded in larger wholes. We're embedded in communities of people, and in ecosystems, and in the cosmos, and in consciousness itself. And if we truly want to live a meaningful life and to awaken ethically, spiritually, morally, intellectually, and so forth, to higher levels, then we are called to question the indoctrination in our culture that reduces us and animals and the earth and our relationships to contracts and to seeing each other as mere instruments to be used for our own benefit or for somehow to manipulate situations and others to get what I want. That this undercuts at a very deep level our sense of belonging to a benevolent universe and our sense of confidence in ourselves as expressions of wisdom and compassion and creativity and of beauty. And I hope you have all noticed in these sessions how people who have been speaking have all been motivated by a sense of caring, this deep sense of caring. Caring, maybe they began, we heard this quite a bit from people, they began just caring about their own health. They just cleaned up their diet because they wanted to be healthier. But how that motivation transformed over time, and now their motivation is a much deeper motivation based on compassion for hungry people, for slaughterhouse workers, and for future generations, and for the animals who are mutilated and confined, and for wildlife that are losing their habitats and so forth. That this care really gets deeper and richer and more vital. I think it's very interesting that right now, or soon, I think very soon, there's going to be a ceremony in Bohemian Grove in Northern California. It's the gathering of the richest and most powerful men in the world. Once a year, they gather there at the Bohemian Grove, and they have the ceremony that they do called the Cremation of Care, where they burn something. It's sort of a top secret kind of a thing, but the basic thing is they're burning care, so they don't have to have any cares anymore. And I think it's a really very apropos ritual for these people who are running what I refer to in the World Peace Diet as the military, industrial, meat, medical, pharmaceutical complex, which is in many ways devastating the health of our children, of ourselves, of ecosystems and animals, and laying waste our planet. These large corporations, as we all know, like Monsanto and Dow and the large pharmaceutical corporations, are using the animal food industry to consolidate an enormous amount of power and wealth by making people sick. I just was told by a friend of mine just a couple of days ago, she said she was talking to a woman who worked at the local hospital, and the woman said that when someone comes in and they're diagnosed with cancer, that typically that means that the hospital, the medical industry is going to be making anywhere from $500,000 to $1.5 million. And so they really, in a way, they need a lot of they like that, in a sense. I hate to say that, but I mean in the sense of if we're an industry and a business that thrives on profit, is it any wonder that we have genetically engineered organisms, that we have animals being injected with all kinds of toxic growth hormones, eating noxious feed, and feeding animals to each other, creating carcinogenic substances, forcing people, in a sense, through advertising and other ways to eat animal foods that are, as T. Colin Campbell said, casein is the most potent carcinogen to which humans are routinely exposed. And just eating dairy products is a major cause of breast cancer and prostate cancer and colon cancer. So all of these understandings are hidden and covered up. And I think, obviously, the most important thing we can do if we love the world, if we love our children, if we care about ourselves and our life, is to make an effort to uncover the truth about the situation, about the relationships, about what we're really designed to eat. And we had the opportunity to hear really stellar presentations about these subjects of what we're designed to eat and the ramifications of our violence towards animals for food in so many ways, environmentally and in many other ways. And I'd like to just summarize some of this right now and maybe go a little bit more deeply. It was so wonderful to hear Philip Wallen talking about, in his passionate way, his discovery being a high-flying banker who was flying around in Learjets and working and just basically using resources and people for profit, for corporate profits, until he was, they were going to take over a slaughterhouse, and he was shown the slaughterhouse and what happened, and how that he was actually spiritually attuned enough to walk away from everything when he saw that and give it all up. And now, as you all know, he's supporting over 500 organizations that are helping to reduce the amount of animals that we're slaughtering and the amount of violence in the world. And we can all do that. This is the great teaching, I think, of Veganpalooza, is that there's a community of people that will support us. And even if they won't support us, we do it anyway. Because what else can we do except to make an effort to live our lives in integrity and authentically? And so so briefly, the point I want to emphasize here is that there are both outer and inner ramifications of our routine mistreatment of animals for food. And as we've heard, we're killing, just in the United States only, this is just one country, we're killing over 75 million animals every day for food. This is routine and relentless, and the ramifications of this are enormous. And if we just look environmentally briefly, because a lot of this hasn't actually been said explicitly, the driving force behind environmental devastation on this planet is animal agriculture. And as we live in an RV and travel around North America, we see it very clearly. Most of the land has been reduced to monocrops. Monocropping is where you don't allow any species to grow except one. And in most of it, over 50% of all the agricultural land in the entire North America, actually, is devoted to just one of two crops, either genetically engineered corn or genetically engineered soybeans. And these are primarily fed to hyper-confined cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, and other animals, and factory-farmed fish, in order to fatten them up for slaughter or to give dairy products or eggs to people. So it's an extremely wasteful, inefficient system. These animals convert what are essentially could be very healthy grains and legumes with fiber and protein and lipids and carbohydrate. They destroy all that, and instead of that, they convert them into four things: saturated fat, cholesterol, acidifying animal protein, and mountains of very toxic sewage, which ends up in the air and in the water, devastating aquifers and devastating rivers and streams and waterways, and eventually ending up in the water, waters of the ocean. We have the largest dead zones now in the world, where the Mississippi River comes in because of all the so-called nutrient-rich runoff, which comes off of this huge expanse of monocrop fields where nothing can live because of hypoxia, which is basically the loss of oxygen in the water caused by algae from all the nitrogen and fertilizers that are used, these toxic chemical fertilizers. So it's very important, I think, for us to realize that the air pollution, water pollution, climate destabilization, again, is driven by eating animal foods, that the cutting down of the rainforest, we're losing over an acre per second of rainforest right now, and this, again, the driving force behind that is cutting down the rainforest in South America to grow soybeans for factory-farmed animals, especially factory-farmed fish, as well as chickens and cows. And when we lose an acre of rainforest, we're not just losing some trees, we're actually losing whole webs of life that are beautiful and are enriched and are really the vital strands of life on this planet that took millions of years to evolve. How could we destroy things that we can never replace so easily, so arrogantly, really, without, as Philip Wallen said, it's a folly. It's such a folly to do this. And in the same way we're strip mining the oceans, that basically all the fisheries are in a state of collapse at this point because, as Harold Brown said, huge amounts of fish are being used as fish meal for fertilizer and also to feed cows and pigs and chickens and other animals. Cows actually eat more fish in the United States than human beings do because scientists have discovered if you feed cows a lot of fish, they'll give more milk and get fat. So we have to understand these outer ramifications environmentally, the loss of genetic diversity, global warming and climate destabilization and pollution the killing of wildlife. We have in the United States Wildlife Services, which is a branch of the Department of Agriculture, which has a millions of dollar budget and kills millions of animals in the United States. In aerial gunnings from helicopters, they're shooting coyotes, wolves, bears, mountain lions, badgers, prairie dogs, raccoons, many different types of birds. Pretty much anything that's not a cow or a pig or livestock, the ranchers want eliminated from nature. And so this war is going on because people are choosing meat, dairy products, and eggs. And I think it's very important for us to understand these ramifications to the environment and to the web of life, and then also to understand the ramifications in the outer world to what is happening in our culture. Because again, the beauty of this earth is that it is so amazingly, wonderfully abundant. Like Harold Brown was telling us, we can grow essentially, it looks like, twice as much food in a given area of land if we grow it organically, if we grow it veganically without any animal inputs. And we can feed everyone on this planet with a fraction of the land that we're using now. We're growing enough food right now, even with our very poor agricultural system that's very primitive, using all this, causing enormous amount of violence to ecosystems, lots of toxic petroleum and fertilizers and pesticides. We're still, with that, we're growing enough food to feed between 12 and 15 billion people. We only have 7 billion people. We're growing enough food to feed everybody twice as much as they could possibly eat if people ate a plant-based diet. And yet, instead of doing that, we're feeding most of the grain and legumes instead of to people, to animals. And we have roughly 1 billion people starving, as we heard from Don Moncrief. We have 1 billion people starving, and we have that driving war and inequality and conflict in the world and enormous amount of suffering, while another 1 billion people suffer from diseases of eating huge amounts of animal foods, as we heard, the diseases of affluence that are endemic in modern industrialized cultures, like heart disease and cancer and osteoporosis and obesity and diabetes and strokes and kidney and liver disease and autoimmune diseases and all these things. So this is a situation, and we also have to remember that the slaughterhouse workers have to do this work, so we bring the worst out of them. We have whole armies of people with, as Nathan Runkel pointed out, with he called it, it was induced, I can't remember the name of it, but anyway, induced traumatic stress disorder, where perpetrator-induced traumatic stress disorder by forcing people to be perpetrators of violence. They have the highest rates of alcoholism and drug abuse and spousal abuse and child abuse and violence in our society, because it brings out the worst in them and sends these whole webs of violence into our culture. So to understand clearly the violence towards the earth, the violence towards animals, the violence towards human beings, the diseases that we reap psychologically, spiritually, and physically are all interconnected. And this is, I think, once we see this bigger picture, once we begin to understand this, we start to realize that we have an enormous obligation, actually, as individuals, not only to understand this, but to try to bring our lives into alignment with this understanding. And what I've discovered, and essentially did my best to write about in the World Peace Diet, is that everything I'm saying so far is only half of the picture, because there's a whole other half. This is the outer half, you know, what's happening in our culture, the wars and violence and disease and environment, you know, environmental devastation and so forth. But there's a whole other aspect to this, which is the inner ramifications, the inner implications of being raised in a culture where we've all been forced from the time we're little kids to eat the flesh of animals and their secretions. And when we understand that, I think then we have this wonderful opportunity even more to understand why we have the problems we're having, because essentially the mentality that's required of all of us to go along with this culture, and I think it's important to understand that nobody eats animal foods because of their own free choice. everyone does it because they've been forced into it by the meal rituals that we're all forced to participate in. And so everybody is just basically eating meat and dairy products and eggs because they're following orders. They're just doing what they've been told to do. And the orders come from on high. They come from mom when I'm only 2 years old. You know, I don't question that. Or my father on the barbecue when I'm 3 years old. And from the all of the media and the doctors and the government and the ministers and everybody, the heads of religion and science and commerce and the family institution, education, everywhere, teachers, this message is just injected into all of us. And yet we have to understand it's a message that is not in our best interest. It's a way of living that is absolutely not in our best interest or in anyone's best interest, except perhaps for the small band of people who are celebrating the cremation of care and getting very wealthy on all of this. But for us, if we want to have a world where people are fed well and where we have beautiful, clear streams and happiness, that we must question this because we are injected with a certain mentality. That's the key. The mentality to kill 75 million animals every day is essentially a mentality of reductionism, of the commodification of life, of reducing beings to mere instruments and commodities, of excluding them from the sphere of our compassion and concern, and of essentially seeing the world in terms of elitism and privilege, that certain beings are inherently superior to others, and superior ones can use the inferior ones. So there's this underlying ethic, essentially, of might makes right, domination and exploitation and oppression of others by those who have the power. Those of us who are born into this, eating animal foods, we essentially are the problem. We are actually living our lives as expressions of this when we go into a restaurant or a store and purchase the flesh of animals that have been horribly treated. And then not only do we purchase it, but then we even go farther and we actually eat it and we feed it to our children and we perpetuate this violence down through the centuries. And what I was trying to show in the World Peace Diet also is that this has a historical context. This has only been going on for 10,000 years. You know, we've been enslaving animals. It's very interesting to realize that when the American Indians saw the Europeans come over here, you know, the Europeans, when they came over to the United States, they didn't just come by themselves. They brought animals that were their property. They brought their cows and their sheep and their goats and their pigs and their chickens. And the Indians looked at that and they shook their heads in sadness and they called these animals slave animals. And we have been born into a culture of slave, where we have enslaved animals. And what I've realized in the research that I've been doing in this for the last 30 years is that whenever we enslave others, we enslave ourselves. And as we sow, we reap. And what it takes in order to enslave animals, essentially, is a repression of the divine feminine power within all of us. Whether we're men or women, we have this inner capacity of intuition to know directly the truth of our own being and to look beyond the surface level, to see the deep level, to see the light that shines in the eyes of other living beings. And we naturally respect that. We naturally celebrate that and protect that. And that's the core of the spiritual impulse, to awaken from the dream of being a fundamentally separate self with all my problems that creates competition and misery, really without end, to realize that we're all in this together. There is one life living through all of us. We are expressions of that life, and each one of us has as a mission in our life to awaken to the truth that we are and to contribute something, to make a contribution that is our unique contribution to make. And I think all of us, to the degree that we discover that and we are making that contribution, we will feel our life has meaning, is authentic, and is valuable. And if I'm not doing that, if I'm just working a job to make somebody else wealthy and just try to get by and survive, then essentially I'm doing enormous violence to my own spiritual mission and to my purpose. So I really encourage everyone to understand the nature of the system in which we have been born. The slave animals are born into a slave system. And in many ways, as I look around, I can see how as we sow, so shall we reap. And I think that, you know, there's a subchapter, actually, in the World Peace Diet that goes into this. It's very important, I think, for us to understand. You know, I love looking, for example, at the beauty of a little egg. You know, if you think about an egg, a chicken egg or a bird egg, or a goose or duck, any little animal, that is in an egg. And this little being is inside this egg and is growing and developing. And at a certain point, she yearns to get out of the egg, to break through, to burst through the shell. And this is the triumph of life expanding and expressing itself. And so this little being starts pecking and pecking and pecks her way out of the shell. She gets her head out of the shell, and she gets her body out of the shell, and there she is. Ta-da! She has come to Earth. And normally, in that moment, she would be loved by her mother. The mother hen would come over and take her under her wing, and she would just be loved and embraced. And this is the way it is. When little babies are born, they're loved and embraced. And yet, in the animal slave system, as soon as that little baby chick comes out, there is no mother there. It's a barren hatchery of metal, and she's grabbed, and she is sexed, which means they see if it's male or female. If it's an egg operation, females, they immediately have their beaks chopped off, which is so painful that very often they just die right on the spot. And the males are ground up alive, as we heard. So this terrible fate of a little babies, and the same thing for cows and pigs, all of them, a terrible fate. They're stolen from their mothers. They never have any contact with their mothers. They each are become a lone unit of production in a harmless economic system that exists only to harm them, to profit from them, to see them merely as material objects, not as beings who are the subjects of their lives. And if I look at what's happening in our hospitals, at how little babies are treated in many ways the same way, that's not your baby, that's our baby. We will vaccinate that baby. We will take that baby. We'll do what we want with this baby. And I think we have to realize that we have a technology that's very powerful for dominating and controlling animals, that they are really can't. They're powerless in the face of this massive technology that they're born into. And that we are called today, as vegans, as human beings, to understand this, to not contribute to this, to not create the situation where we are going to sow what we are reaping and create systems of total domination for ourselves. Because that is what we're sowing. The United States has the most, or this is an example, highest rate of meat eating in the world, and has the highest rate of incarceration, more people in prison in the entire world, and we eat the most, and we imprison the most animals. So we have to realize that this whole situation is a manifestation of our actions and our understanding, and that it is incumbent on us, if we want to create a world not to, you know, if we're eating animal foods, to move toward becoming a vegetarian. If we're already a vegetarian, then please move toward becoming a vegan. If you're already a vegan, then please move toward becoming a vegan advocate, to devote your life to the most glorious and noble thing anyone can do, which is to help others to understand what's happening on this planet, how we've all been forced to integrate and to basically play out these official stories that we must eat animal foods to get enough protein and calcium, and that they're just put here for us to use, and we just do it, and we therefore become the iron fist of violence towards countless beings, hungry people. And even though the animals themselves never retaliate, what we see is that actually our violence towards them always retaliates. And so, just in closing here, I'll just mention that in any public crime, you know, any crime that's committed publicly, there's always basically three different roles that are acted out. There's the role of the perpetrator. Someone is being violent, for example, the victim who is being beaten. And then there's a bystander, a witness, someone who's watching the whole thing. And what we have to realize is that in that situation, it really is the bystander, the witness, who has the power, who can stop this violence. And the person who is the victim is hoping that the perpetrator will stop this. And actually, if you look deeply, the perpetrator themselves, at a deeper level, would also hope that it would stop. Because violence towards others always boomerangs back. It always does. And if I rob, so will I be robbed. And if I hurt others for my own benefit, I will be harmed in the same way. In the fullness of time, every spiritual and religious teaching of wisdom on the planet has affirmed this, and we know this in our bones. It's our nature. We know this. And so in the situation we're in today, we have the same exact thing happening, except that we have very few, actually. Vegans are a small minority, but we're growing, of people who are acting as bystanders. Maybe we're only 2.5%, maybe, or something like that. And the other 98% of the people are perpetrators. I mean, they're forced into the role of this by being born into a culture where they're taught in a very powerful way to kill and eat animals and pay for that, make it happen. But, you know, in the situation, they are inherently distrustful of the bystander. They hope they wish the bystander or the witness would just go away and let them do what they're doing, because they don't want to be caught in the act. They don't want to have anyone draw attention to it. But from the point of view of the victim, it's absolutely essential that the bystander do something. And so for us, I think, as we become vegans and as we develop our understanding, is to realize that we have the power. The victims and perpetrators are locked in an embrace that is toxic. And and the perpetrators actually are victims as well of the violence. And if we can learn as vegans to be skillful in our way of talking to perpetrators, people who are eating animal foods, who are just doing it because they've been taught to do that and told to do that and are just following orders, and that we can actually plant seeds that will stop this whole cycle of violence, and we'll be able to return our beautiful earth to its rightful place, which is a place where all of us can live in communities of harmony and peace. People say, oh, come on, that's impossible. And I have to say, it is impossible if you're going to eat ice cream cones and cheeseburgers and bacon and eggs. It's absolutely impossible, because the violence inherent in the mentality that requires those foods will make peace impossible. However, the vegan revolution that's happening, the vegan evolution that's happening, is, I think, capable of changing everything. I think it's capable of changing it soon, that we don't have a choice. We must do this. And I think we can reach a critical mass in a time that's less than we perhaps think. So I want to just close this by saying, you know, there's a lot more, obviously, that we could say here, but just to thank all of you who have been listening, and really to just acknowledge you for being the pioneers, being the ones who are that have the courage and the insight to question the toxic official stories of this culture, to not only question them, but to bring your lives into alignment with the realization that we are all interconnected, that animals are the subjects of their lives, that all of us together can create a world of harmony and freedom and justice and peace, and that the price we pay for that is to simply treat others with kindness and respect, and we will have greater health, greater harmony, and we can see this change happening. I think this Veganpalooza has simply been yet another ramification and manifestation of our yearning as human beings to celebrate our lives on this beautiful planet the way we are intended to do that. So my blessings to everyone. And Steve, I want to just also thank you profoundly for the enormous amount of work that you've put into this. I know there were times when you thought it was just more than could be humanly done to arrange this whole thing. And so my deep appreciation also, obviously, to you. You've just done an incredible amount of work to help this happen. And
Thank you, Will.
Thanks to everyone. It's been a really enriching experience. And may the ripples continue to flow out into the web of relations on this planet to bless all living beings of the past, present, and future. We are all interconnected. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Will. Thank you for that message and for all the work you've done on this program and in spreading the vegan message, making it your life's passion and work. We should mention your show special that we're putting together here for Veganpalooza, because it really takes your message to a whole new level beyond your book, beyond anything anyone's ever seen, for the World Peace Diet Mastery Program Facilitator Training.
Basically, these are just trainings that you can go, they're self-paced, and to go more deeply into understanding the principles that I was just talking about in the World Peace Diet. And we just like to make them available as best we can to people. They include not only all of the material, the recordings and supplementary readings. I read and go through the different papers that you write for the certification. And we also have a circle, we call it the World Peace Diet Circle, where we have a monthly phone call where we all can talk about the ideas, and we have we pretty much always have a guest speaker as well, and chance to do Q&A. So that's just a chance to immerse more into this understanding, with the idea then that we will know more and be able to go forth and help spread this message in a grassroots way throughout our culture. You know, we have people who have gone through the World Peace Society facilitator training and are putting together World Peace Society study groups and just in trainings in various ways throughout North America, Europe, and Africa, and Australia, and other places. And I think this is the way the change is going to happen. It's not going to come from some gigantic organization like Monsanto or the U.S. government. It's going to come from us at the grassroots level working together and learning. And so we'd just love it. If you are interested, you can find out more. We're trying to make this available just to cover our expenses. That's all it's covering, essentially, to put this on.
This 40% discount is only for members of Veganpalooza, and the link is in the membership site or on the access page, and this can only be used in the month of July 2012 to get this discount. So thank you for that, Dr. Tuttle. With these programs, you know how I feel about them.
Thanks. Great. Okay, and Steve, I also would like to let everybody know here before we finally wrap up Veganpalooza 2012, I'd like to just maybe say a couple of words about Steve Prusak, who's been our co-facilitator throughout the entire Veganpalooza. He's the host of an award-winning health-related radio show called Raw Vegan Radio, and he's working on his second book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Juice Fasting with Penguin Books, which is due out October 2012, and he's currently producing the first vegetarian-related digital magazine for Apple's newsstand, which is called Veg World Magazine. That's going to be coming soon. And Steve, do you want to say just a few words about that before we wrap up?
Great. Yeah, Will, thanks for asking about that. And Veg World Magazine, I mean, my initial idea was a digital magazine version of Veganpalooza where I can access all these leaders and have them contribute articles on their teachings, like Dr. John McDougall, Dr. Neil Bernard, Kathy Freston, Rory Friedman, and many other world-class leaders all contributing to this magazine. The first of its kind. And it will be featured in the Apple Store. So anyone who has an iPad will be able to access this magazine in the newsstand. And it's the first vegetarian magazine in there. And it's, yeah, completely vegan. And the best part is this magazine is completely interactive. There'll be videos inside the magazine of vegan chefs making their favorite dishes. And you could follow right along. The recipe is right there, right below the video. We're going to have audio interviews in there with some of the leading minds in vegan living. We can have some of your music in there, Dr. Tuttle. The technology is unbelievable, so I'm really passionate about getting this information out there through Veg World Magazine. And my intention is that Veg World Magazine is the next evolution of Veganpalooza. We're taking this event and bringing it into an interactive multimedia magazine form. So if you're interested in finding out more about it, we're going to be launching this month, July, and you can sign up free on the mailing list. I'll let you know when the free app is available for the iPad for Veg World Magazine. And if you sign up on the mailing list now, we've got an interview with T. Cullen Campbell on the China study. So sign up at VegWorldMag.com. Also have a link for Veg World Magazine under this show on the access page and in your membership site. So check it out.
Wow. I really, I can hardly imagine the enormous potential that has for helping people to really learn about every aspect of veganism. And it's all going to be in one place at Apple's newsstand. Would people subscribe to this, Steve, or how does that work?
Well, just like a magazine, it can be delivered by individual issues, or you can subscribe to an annual subscription, and it gets delivered right into your iPad as you're sleeping. So there's nothing you have to do. And the doors of possibility here have never been discovered before, and I really plan to take advantage of the technology to bring a magazine out there unlike anything ever seen before. So I'm really excited about it.
Great. And maybe you could tell us a little bit, too, about your book that's coming out in October. I think people might be interested in hearing about that. You have actually a book coming out with Penguin Books. That's wonderful.
Right. So when I first did my first online summit 6 months ago. It was Rawpalooza. Dr. Will Tuttle, you were a part of that, and you gave a keynote presentation. I went on a juice fast because I felt like I needed a lot of energy and clarity of mind to get through it. So I did an extended 24-day juice fast, which I'd never done before, and I blogged about it at Raw Vegan Radio, and I was approached by Penguin Books to write The Complete Idiot's Guide to Juice Fasting, and it's been, you know, a lot of work and a lot of fun, and co-writing that with Bo Rinaldi, who we've all heard. He was part of this conference as well. So that'll be out in October, and it's a prescriptive guide to doing any kind of juice fast, a one-day, a three-day, a week juice fast. We've got recipes in there and vegan and raw food recipes to help start the fast and come off it.
Great. Yeah, I also should just let everybody know also that you, Steve, are you're really part also of the World Peace Diet Mastery Program and the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training that we talked about a little bit earlier that we're making a special offer on to help people go more deeply into these ideas that you really helped produce that, and your voice is on there too. So that's another thing that you've really been working with me on for the last few years. You've been working on bringing these out. And I also, so thanks so much for all this. And also just wanted to actually say to everybody that Steve is going to be getting married soon. There's going to be, as I hear, a vegan wedding in the L.A. area. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your vegan wedding?
Oh, wow. Yes, Will. I definitely do. Because it's coming up in 2 weeks, and I can't believe we just did this event 2 weeks before a wedding, and I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. As my fiance will tell you, it's been a little stressful, and she's probably doing a lot of the work. But yeah, we're really excited. We're having a completely vegan, cruelty-free wedding in Topanga Canyon, and I'm marrying my high school sweetheart, and that's really fulfilling for me. We had dated all throughout high school and broke up, went to college, and went our separate ways on the East Coast and met up here in California all these years later, 20-plus years, and she's got a son, so I'm going to become a stepdad, and she's really embraced the vegan lifestyle through the work I'm doing and learning about it, and she's been vegan for 2 years now. So yeah, we're really excited about our vegan wedding, and my family eats meat, so I had to go up against that, Dr. Tuttle. I don't know if you can relate to that, because you had a vegan wedding, right? And did you have meat eaters come to that?
I didn't allow them to come.
You didn't?
Well, actually, yeah, we had Madeline and I got married almost 20 years ago, and in Northern California. We were living way out on a dirt road in a house looking out over an uninhabited valley of redwood trees. And we had a vegan wedding there. We just kind of put it out to everybody. We had about, I guess, close to 100 people came, and it was really wonderful. It was a vegan potluck, so everybody brought something to share. And we reenacted how we met in Switzerland, which was, we did this whole play, which people really loved. We had, we had some local children from the local family. They were the props. They were the mountains and the train. And I kind of came into the little village in Switzerland where I met Madeline, kind of with my brother. And we had our backpacks, and we were kind of looking around. And I found this grand piano in one of the little, in the Waldorf school there, and I started playing it, and then Madeline came by, and she heard me playing, and she said, "Who's making this beautiful music? I heard this in my dreams when I was a child," and she said, I must find out who's making this music." This is kind of really how we met, actually. I was playing the piano over there, and we reenacted it all, and it was just the most beautiful moment, actually. It's kind of hard to describe it, but when everyone came together, and we created a special song for the wedding that we sang together, and then we went down and we had the actual wedding in a redwood grove next to a little stream with candles and everything done by some vegan friends of ours, and it was and then we had a big vegan celebration. We made our own music and brought our own food, so it was definitely a do-it-yourself wedding. It didn't really cost any money at all, but it was a wonderful celebration of community. And I really think, to make a statement like that to a community, it just sort of creates this enormous bond that 20 years later, we just feel so deeply connected together, because I think partly, I mean, obviously it's more than just a wedding, but having a wedding where you really make a statement about your values and do it in front of community that you people you love, it just creates a force field that not only goes forth the rest of your life, it blesses them and helps them to do the same thing. So it's great to see, Steve, what you're doing, and we send our love, even though I'll be on the East Coast, but I'm with you in spirit there.
Thank you, Will. Yeah, and we were thinking about eloping, but we're going to do it this way.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much. I think it's also probably the time for us, Steve, to finally thank the sponsors of Veganpalooza. And maybe I'll just start off with thanking the people who have been so really with us here. It's the Health Force company, and they make Vitamineral Green, Warrior Food, Acai Resveratrol, Earth Sacred Healing Food, and Zeo Force. And this is Jameis Sheridan's incredible vegan products. And I know Madeline and I, she makes every day for us Vitamineral Green. In the afternoon, we have a drink, and she really swears this is the stuff that's the greatest stuff. And I think it's wonderful. It's beyond organic. So thanks. We just want to give a big thank you to Health Force for sponsoring Veganpalooza.
Our thanks to Echo Bella. You guys heard from Sally during this conference. Incredible information about beauty on the inside and out. And Echo Bella was started to provide cruelty-free organic cosmetics and natural skincare products. And I've been a big fan of their work. They donated generous gift certificates during the contest throughout the conference, hundreds of dollars dedicated to this cause and really behind their work. So thank you, Sally and Echo Bella. We'd also like to thank Sparkle Hearts, natural beauty for girls. It's cruelty-free and vegan. We gave out some of their packages throughout the event as well. And you can check out their website at sparklehearts.com.
Right. Thanks, Steve. And also, A Well-Fed World. We heard from Don Moncrief. Well-Fed World is a hunger relief and animal protection organization based in Washington, D.C. Mission is to feed families and save animals. And we just really appreciate the work that Don is doing with the Well-Fed World, afwf.org. And also like to thank World Peace and Yoga Jubilee, which is an international gathering of peacemakers coming from all over the globe. That will be this October in Cincinnati. I'll be speaking there. It's a great conference where we bring together spirituality and veganism. So we want to thank World Peace and Yoga Jubilee for sponsoring us as well.
And our thanks to our sponsor, Healthy Chick, at healthychick.com, committed to positive values, all ethically non-GMO, vegan, and cruelty-free supplements for healthy chicks and healthy hunks. Healthychick.com. Our thanks to V-Dog for Pooch and the Planet, vegan, cruelty-free dog food.
All right, great, Steve. And then here, kind of wrapping it up, Loving Hut also has been very generous in donating to help put on Veganpalooza 2012. Loving Hut is the largest family of vegan restaurants in the world and is the winner of the Veg News 2010 Favorite Vegan Restaurant Award, with more than 200 outlets in the major cities all over the world, over 40 outlets in the United States, including Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, Phoenix, Pittsburgh, Portland, L.A., New York, and San Francisco. I speak a lot at Loving Hut restaurants around the United States and think that they're doing phenomenal work to help bring the vegan message into the world. So we give a big thank you to Loving Hut and encourage everyone to check out the local Loving Hut near you. And as you patronize them, you're really helping to bring the vegan message farther and wider. Thanks, Loving Hut.
And finally, a big thanks to Healthy Juicer. They contributed juicers throughout the conference. So thank you so much for their Healthy Juicer, the affordable manual wheatgrass juicer. You can click for a special discount right on veganpalooza.com or in the membership site. And a big thanks to all our sponsors, Will.
Right. So that brings us, I think, basically to the end of Veganpalooza 2012. The end is a beginning. And I know I have been really receiving an enormous amount of information and inspiration throughout this 5 days. I want to thank everyone who helped make this possible, all of you who have joined us in what has been the largest vegan education, as we said, event ever. And may the ripples go out and bless all beings We just give a big thank you to everyone, and let's go forth and continue this work for all of us. Thanks again. And Steve, do you have any final words?
Great. Well, we'll be back in 2013 with a brand new Veganpalooza, so stay tuned for that. And we've got our special bonus call this week. This will be our event wrap-up call, most likely on Tuesday at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern. But we'll send you an email and let you know for sure. So thank you all for being part of Veganpalooza 2012 Vegetarian World Summit. Thank you all for your support.